On today's episode of Secrets to Scaling an E-commerce Brand, I got to have Reza from Motion, my very favorite creative app, come on the podcast. And we talked all things creative analytics. We talked about why it is so ridiculously important to be able to look at the drivers of your creative. We walked through Motion itself, but really what we were getting into is what in the world is working in creative these days. We talked about some of the early days of e-com and how far we've come from that. Guys, this is an episode that you are not going to want to miss.
Guys, I seriously found the best app ever for creative testing. If you haven't used Motion yet, the creative analytics platform used by all of the top e-com D2C brands like Vuori, True Classic, The Farmer's Dog, Hexclad, and hundreds more to ship more winning ads, here's why you gotta try it out. Everybody knows that the right creative is the number one lever for success with paid ads. That is legitimately how you make money. But consistently shipping new winning creative, but you're going to need media buyers and creative teams that are all actually on the same page or rowing in the same direction. As of right now, you're probably spending hours trying to just find, to like go back and forth with Google Sheets and your ad platforms and your tools. And then you're probably spending even more time plugging all of that back into different decks, all for the rest of your team to tell them what actually works. Or maybe you built your own automated solution using like Google Data Studio, Looker, Tableau, but it still can't deliver that tactical creative insights that you actually need to scale. Well, in a perfect world, you can have an elegant way to combine both the visual assets and that performance data so that media buyers can save time and creative teams can get all of the details that they need to make great ads all in one specific place. And that's where Motion comes in. And you guys know I've talked about Motion a ton on this podcast. I love these guys. In seconds, you can build powerful visual reports using data from your ad accounts, including TikTok, Facebook, or Meta, and YouTube as well. You can build these incredibly powerful visual reports using all of that data. You can then monitor your performance metrics and see your visual assets in the same platform. There's no need to go back and forth across multiple apps. You're finally going to have media buyers and creative teams all rowing in the same direction, working together to create and scale your next big winner. So if you're ready to learn how to use the best D2C and e-commerce creative tool out there, Motion, please go to motionapp.com and start your free trial. Guys, I am obsessed with this app. If any of you guys have sat down on calls with me, you'll know like it is the source of truth that I go to all of the time. Even better, because they are sponsoring the podcast this month, you get 50% off your first month when you mention myself, Jordan West, or Upgrowth Commerce. So again, go to motionapp.com onto today's episode.
Hey guys, Jordan West back with another episode of Secrets to Scaling Your E-commerce Brand. I am looking forward to this conversation today. I am really, really excited to have Reza from Motion on the podcast. Really looking forward to diving into this. So full transparency, Motion sponsored the podcast. Interestingly, I've talked about Motion, I don't even know how many times without them ever being a sponsor. So now it's just official. Absolutely love what they're doing over there. And I'm really looking forward to diving into a lot of creative strategy today, different ways to use Motion. We're going to just talk a lot about that. A lot of you have had questions for me specifically about this tool. So I think that this is a really great way for us to be able to actually dive in specifically to this tool. And we're just going to talk about creative in general and how we're able to leverage creative across different channels and all that kind of stuff. So without further ado, Reza, welcome to the pod.
Thank you, Jordan. Appreciate it. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's great. You normally are in Canada. Same with me. I love talking to people, you know, from Canada. Are you Canadian? I didn't even ask you.
Yeah, I grew up in Montreal and then moved to Toronto about 10 years ago.
Okay.
And yeah, so proud Canadian.
Okay. I could hear the little, I was like, is that a French Canadian accent? My kids are in French, so they don't have the accent, obviously, but they're in French immersion. And so speaking French all the time. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm pretty good with English. But Reza, for people who don't know anything about you, tell us just a little bit about who you are and what you're up to these days.
Sure. So I've been building in and around like the Shopify ecosystem, I want to say close to 10 years now. So we started a company called Shoelace.
You started Shoelace?
Yeah, you didn't know that?
No, I didn't know that. That's great. Who's your business partner there again? I see him on Twitter all the time.
Well, we have two co-founders. And then once I started working on Motion, we brought on Corey Dobbin, who's now the CEO of Shoelace.
That's right. I see Corey posting all the time.
Yeah. Long history. We started off as an app in the Shopify App Store, built that business. Eventually, it became a marquee. That's kind of what the market wanted from Shoelace. And and so once that happened, started kind of thinking about what's next. I've always been in love with software, just like building stuff. And as we explored to build next, kind of came as a result of that. And so I just spent a lot of time talking to some of our favorite brands and agencies, just like friends and partners in the ecosystem, trying to understand what some of their points were. I think one of the interesting things about software is that there's a lot of software companies, a lot of apps out there. And you can see like there's a few apps that solve like really important problems, and then a number of other apps that solve like, you know, lots of other smaller issues. And we were always just really excited about trying to find and solve one of the biggest, like most important pain points that the customers might have. And that kind of led us down the rabbit hole of creative when we were doing like customer discovery calls and just trying to spend a lot of time with our favorite teams. And like, let's say 2020, 2021, that was around, this was like, you know, or was it iOS scene at the time, whatever iOS update it was that like changed the game, like that was looming. But even outside of that, like, any conversation you had with brands at that time, like still continues to be true to this day. The topic of creative just came up every single time as one of the most important issues that the teams were facing. And like, there was a number of reasons for that. On the media buying side, like a lot of things became more algo driven, right? Like media buyers were setting more broad targeting, and terms like creative is the new targeting started to come up. And I think like one of as well is like when you see, we saw like if I go from 80,000 merchants to now, probably, I think when we started building, like Shopify was at like 70, 80,000 merchants, which was wild.
Was it? That was it, hey?
Yeah.
That was 2015 when you came on the Shopify ecosystem?
2015, that's right. Yeah, I remember it. Like,
yeah, that was the same year that I entered too.
Yeah. And we had an investor pitch at that time. And I remember an investor told us like, oh, Shopify's plateaued now. There's not much growth left here. Like the app store is like pretty, I'm not sure how much more growth is left here. It's just like hilarious. And also a reminder that like take investor comments with a grain of salt sometimes. And always. So, you know, when you see 80,000 merchant over to 2 million growth, I think what that means is that like the good old days are done, right? And I think that's been true for some time. I remember when like people were making so much money with drop shipping, and like you had these simple Facebook ads with just like white background, product shot, just like printing cash, right?
Oh, like, and it crushed. And that was Shoelace. This is hilarious because I used Shoelace back like right away. So I was like, oh, set up, like I didn't even know what a retargeting campaign was. And that was one of the first products you guys offered, was this like basically just set it and forget it retargeting funnel.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, and then, so without Shoelace, I actually wouldn't have known how to do any of this stuff. And then I was like, oh, wait, I could set that up on my own. And so I started like researching how to do it. And that's really how I got into Facebook ads. It's hilarious that you say that about, you know, especially with that confluence of Shoelace in there. It's funny because, you know, most industries, they've been around for a long time. With e-com and Shopify specifically, it's like, dude, we were OGs in 2015.
Yeah. And so like things we saw too, probably like around that time, a couple of years after, is like a lot of venture capital dollars also poured into direct to consumer brands. And so like, I think that's kind of proven not to be the investors kind of backed away a little bit from that category, but all of those things together meant that everything just got so competitive, and brands were now fighting with each other for attention for the same customers in these like very crowded social feeds. And so all of the different elements coming together meant that creative had become this really important, critical piece for brands looking to find success in this like post iOS 14, post maturity of e-commerce phase. And so the more we poked at that, the more we realized like, man, there's a lot of problems that go down this rabbit hole of creative. Like number one, it's like, if you want to spend any kind of meaningful budget on media spend, like it's impossible to do that without creative volume, right? Forget about like, we're not even talking about like performance. We're just talking about like, I need to get my ads to spend a couple hundred thousand dollars a month.
Yeah.
It seems impossible to do that without a robust creative engine. And so that's number one. And so we saw that like at that time, teams were thinking about like, I need to figure out ways to produce a very high volume of creative in a very short period of time. And that was like a really big pain point that we discovered. And then we started to see, okay, like when teams started to figure that out and we're like, we have this like call it, let's say, supply chain of creative figured out. We're able to produce stuff. We know how to do it. Now our big question is like, what on earth do we create? And it's not like you create, you know, a couple hundred ads and then you're done for the quarter or you're done for the year. This is like this constant, like you need to feed the beast every week. And it's just like, it's never ending. And so we started to notice that the biggest pain point people were having once they got across that threshold of being able to produce like a high volume of creative reliably, the big question was, what do we create? How do we decide what to create? And then there was like this issue where, you know, you're sitting all on all this performance data, the media buyers have access to all this like performance insight. And I'm not even talking about like, there's all the cool stuff you could do with soft metrics and whatnot, but like just straight up, like which ads got spent, which ads performed, even those basic insights were buried away and very hard to communicate with the creative team who was less data driven. And so we noticed all these spreadsheets and pivot tables and Google Data Studio and all these like clunky ways where people
and then throw DCTs in there too.
Oh yeah.
Right. Like where it's like, and which right now, I mean, if nobody knows, that is like the best possible way to test. I love using, as much as Charlie is an interesting fellow, I love using Charlie's methods when it comes to all of this. Like it works, it actually works. But the problem is you have to go into breakdowns and you have to see like, there's so much data. Whereas like you guys pick all that up, you figured it out.
Exactly. I think like the main thing was like, you know, you have the creative side over here and the media buying side over there. And both of those teams felt very distant and siloed to a certain extent, like that continues to be true. And it's a super interesting problem because like in many ways, the jobs are so different. So you have like media buyers who are like number crunchers, like analytical types, like very, very hyper revenue focused individuals. And on the creative side, like, you know, these are people who are more visual or more artistic, who are like thinking about how things like look and feel. And it's not easy for those two different like personas to communicate with one another and find common ground.
Yeah.
And I think what a lot of brands have started to realize is you have to find a way to bridge those two worlds. Like it's just not possible to run an effective media buying operation if you don't have like a really robust approach to creative and creative testing and creative strategy. And it's also very difficult to know what to create as a creative if you don't have this feedback loop of like, all right, well, what happened to the 100 ads that I created last week? Which ones of them performed? Why did they perform? What should we do more of? What should we do less of? And so like our whole job at Motion has been with our product, with our content, with like every part of the business, how do we create, how do we help bridge the gap between media buyers and creatives? How do we help people who are more data driven to like tap into their creative side? How do we help people who are more creative tap into their data side with this idea that like everybody knows these, like the rare persona of the individual who's able to balance the art and the science and be equal parts creative, equal parts analytical. Those are like the unicorns at every company and they're so valuable and they create so much value for themselves and their careers and their companies. And our whole view is that like, that shouldn't be a rare persona. We think that like, you know, regardless of which side you start from, you should be able to tap into the other side and hopefully with the help of like different tools and platforms, be effective at balancing both those two worlds. And that's just like a super important business objective these days. And we're hoping to help with that as much as possible.
I want to call something out interesting in Motion, even with that. I love the different colors that you have that overlay on top of the metrics as well. Because for me, as probably a little bit more on the creative side of things, I love looking at those reports because it really helps me immediately visualize sort of where things are comparatively to others. So if you guys have never used the Motion platform before, basically the idea is that, you know, we have, you know, numbers that are better than the mean, right, are going to be green generally, or like they'll be a little bit green. And you can set these up differently. This is the way I like to have my dashboard set up. And then, you know, the darker red that it gets, the farther away from the mean that it is on the opposite side. For me, that just helps me visualize everything. I'm like, oh, this is so easy to see why this particular ad is crushing the way that it is. Sometimes it's actually interesting there, like, you know, I'm not going to get into this because I'm getting into cost per clicks and all sorts of stuff that I don't want to get into right now. So I want to know, what is the best use case for, particularly for Motion? Like why would brands use it? Is this more of just like an agency thing, or does this make sense for brands to be using as well?
Definitely makes sense for brands. I think it makes sense for anybody who spends at least $50,000 a month in media spend, it starts to be when Motion becomes really important to have. And I would say it's less about Motion, the product. It's more about the workflow that Motion enables. And so if you're spending above that amount, you probably have like a high volume of creative output every week. And probably as an organization, whether you're, you know, as a brand in-house or working with an agency, actually that doesn't matter either way, you probably have some kind of cadence where you're doing some reporting on your creative so that you can take those insights and put them into your next batch of creatives. And so I think when a brand gets to a level where their spend goals require them to have like this constant output of creative, then that means that as an organization, as just like a workflow that they need internally, it becomes pretty important to sort of bridge the gap between what happens on the media buying side and what happens on the creative side. And so that might mean like, you know, you're running a weekly meeting where the media buying team and the creative team are getting together. Sometimes those are in-house folks, external partners, consultants, like you name it. It can look in all kinds of different ways.
Yeah.
Once that workflow of trying to bridge the gap between what happens on the creative side and the data side starts to become a pain that you feel as a brand. And I think it's pretty obvious when you feel it, once you start crossing that like 50K a month in spend threshold, then that workflow becomes really important. And then Motion helps a lot with that. And so you could go and like, you know, spend that hour meeting as a team, poking through Facebook Ads Manager and trying to like make sense of it. But like to your point about DCOs earlier, or like however you have your campaign set up in Facebook or TikTok or other places, often the same creative is running in a bunch of different campaigns anyway. And so you want to aggregate them. So it's hard to do that in platform. And so often the step that we see people doing before Motion is when they realize, wait, I can't actually do the kind of analysis that I want in platform. Let me export this to a spreadsheet and start doing some like nerdy pivot table data analysis. Yeah. That starts to be the phase that we see people are doing before they get into Motion. And then the problem with that is like, A, not everybody on the team is a spreadsheet whiz. And B, the problem with spreadsheets is like, it's not a great environment for visual analysis. It's not a great place to like consume an ad and play it and watch it as a team and like talk about it. Cause all you see is like rows of text and data. It's very hard to get like visual content incorporated into a spreadsheet. And especially in this era of like remote work where we're using Slack, we're building decks, you want to make it so that the information about what's working and what's not is as easy to, you know, put together as possible and as easy to consume as possible for everybody else. So you might have like a video editor on your team or an influencer that you're working with or all kinds of different partners. And you want the information not just to be like a personal solo analysis. You want the analysis to also now move so that other people can also get on the same page about what's working and what's not. And so I think as soon as you get into the mode of like trying to distill insights on what's working and what's not creatively and communicate that with other people, you're starting to get into a pain point that Motion does a really good job at solving. And so I think if any of that sounds like, you know, the situation that somebody's in, chances are that Motion would make their lives and their team's lives much better.
Hey guys, before we get back to today's episode, I just wanted to tell you about an app that I am absolutely loving, and it's the Motion app. It is the most incredible way to see all of your creative insights in one place. Our team at Upgrowth is using it absolutely religiously on every single account. The brands that we own, we're using it on every single account. It's an absolute no-brainer. I know a lot of you have actually reached out to me asking if I can demo it for you. And maybe I should make a Loom video for you guys or something like that. But I highly recommend going over to motionapp.com. Mention Jordan West or mention Upgrowth Commerce and you're going to get 50% off of your first month. And that's after the free trial. Again, that's motionapp.com. Go check it out, guys.
I want to say from the agency side, because I think about 30%-ish of people, it's hard to know on podcast stats, right? But I think about 30% of the people that listen to this are agency owners. Huh. Agency owners, my close rate when I'm doing sales, I occasionally will do sales for bigger clients, you know, when we need to bring some other expertise sort of in. My close rate is almost 100%. I can't think of anyone who I've done a Motion walkthrough and been able to communicate what is going on with their creative in a half hour session that I have not closed as a client. Like it's crazy because communication is what it's all about, right? The reason why, I mean, if you guys look in the background here, agencies suck, right? There's a lot of reasons why, right? And I'm sure you'd say that too, as I don't know if you still, you know, are an owner over there or not, but it is inherent that agencies suck. And one of the reasons why is this lack of communication of what is actually going on, right? And motion for us just helps us with that. Right, it's like it's so easy for us to show, hey, here's the aggregate of this one. And I love the call out on that, right? Aggregating that creative that you're running in multiple different ad sets or campaigns is so ridiculously powerful. That alone is like the reason why I use Motion, is like that the aggregate of that data is so ridiculously important, because it tells us if the creative is actually driving incremental revenue or not, right? Well, maybe incrementality is a little hard, but whether it's driving results in some sort of meaningful kind of way. I want to ask you a question here. If you had, and this is kind of a ridiculous question, but it's kind of fun. You get one piece of data that you can pull in Motion. That's it. What is it that's going to tell you whether or not that ad is going to succeed or not?
I'd say spend.
Spend? Double interesting. Spend. Okay. What? That's not what I was thinking. Okay. Well, I want to hear why.
Well, spend to me is number one, because the job that I think most people are trying to do in all of this, like the media buy and the creative strategy, is like you want to produce winners that scale, right? You want to produce, like, everybody has these creatives in their ad account. It's like, man, this one just keeps crushing. It's been crushing for months. And, you know, if something is performing and then it fizzles out, what's the point, right? And often, like, you can set up your campaign structures in all kinds of different ways. I know, like, the cost cap way versus like other ways, but like regardless of how you do it, what you're looking for is you want Facebook to deliver spend to your creative. That's usually like the number one question. Like the first stop question is like, did this thing even get picked up by the algos? Like, did it run? Is it resonating? Is it scaling? Is it delivering spend? And the secondary question is like, is it doing so within our targets? Like, is it doing it in a way that's like sustainable and that's meeting?
Let's talk a secondary metric then, because I love the spend idea. I immediately, like when you said it, I was like, I think I get, because really it's like, what is the robot liking right now, right? Exactly. Because it's way smarter than we are. Like, it knows what will resonate, because the job of Meta is to get you sales and to also make the newsfeed or wherever people are consuming a great experience so that they continue to come back, even though they're being served up one ad out of every three, you know, three things that they see.
Yeah.
We still go back. Because we love it, right? It does something to us. But that algo is so ridiculously smart that it's going to put spend behind the things that are actually going to have that confluence there. What's the secondary metric?
I guess the secondary metric really depends on the type of business, right? Like an e-commerce brand might be ROAS or cost per purchase. Like that tends to be the two most important ones. I think it's really important to root everything in like real business outcomes, like real revenue. I'm a big fan of the soft metrics. I know there's like a big debate around, like, we had Taylor Holiday at our creative strategy summit, and we had this like whole debate around like, do creative metrics even matter? Things like thumb stop, video watch rate, like all of those things.
Yeah,
I actually think are super important, but everything serves the revenue goal. And like, I think it's really important to be laser focused as a business on, we want to deliver spend efficiently in a way that hits our targets. And then everything else is a question of like, how do we achieve that? How do we do more of that? But I think those two are the gold standard. And then everything else is trying to play detective to figure out why. Why is this one scaling at this spend threshold and this like efficiency, this performance threshold that we're really happy about? And trying to uncover why that is or why it's not working. But I'd say spend number one, and then ROAS or cost per purchase as metric number two if you're an e-commerce brand.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Before that, I'm going to tell you my choices since I'm the host here. Yeah. So I love spend. I love that. I would not have had that as my primary metric, but of course that makes sense. Now that you say it, I'm like, oh yeah, you're smarter than me. Okay, that's great. My secondary metric would be click to purchase. I love the click to purchase metric. Like, for me, I'm just obsessed with it. When I'm going through data, I'm like, oh, that's a winner. Why is that one a win? Because it tells me that it's actually going to drive conversions. What I'd love to know, and it's too bad we don't have a ton more time left. Going back, you mentioned Taylor. I think Taylor Holiday is the best dude in direct consumer. I look up to him so much. Him and I did a little pod swap a while ago, and he is just as nice as you think that he is. Like, he is a, you know, what we call like a level 5 leader. Like, what an incredible dude. I just want to shout him out because I look up to him so much. I was going to get back to talk click to purchase. You guys have these new metrics that you've put in, the drive conversions, capture attention. Tell me how those work comparatively, because I'm having a hard time knowing whether or not I want to trust them because I don't understand them.
Sure. Yeah. So for some context, when it comes to the soft metrics, and I think this is in particular related to all the creative team members. So I think it's like the more information that the creative team can have around what's resonating, what's not resonating about the creative, then, you know, I don't think that you can take something that goes like, if something had a really strong hook where you captured attention in the first 3 seconds, if that did a really good job, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to drive revenue. But those are all like really interesting data points that if you're a creative person, it's like, how do you feed them as much relevant information as possible about different parts of this creative that might be resonating or not with people? And what they do with that information, it's kind of like, that's where the art comes in. The science is like the fact of like, hey, you should know that this creative had a really strong hook, or this creative, people are watching this video quite a bit. Obviously, in like under the backdrop of we're actually only looking at the ones that hit meaningful spend and either hit or didn't hit our performance goals. But once we go one level deeper and start to like analyze those creatives and try to make sense of them, then my view is the more information you can give to the creative team around those different metrics and how people interacted with those creatives, then, you know, you can trust them and their artistic skills to cook up new interesting things for that. So I think about them as like ingredients and inputs into the creative process that might, you know, be used in all kinds of different ways by all kinds of different creative people, and that's fine. But when you look at those soft metrics, typically, and this is the reason we created what we've called motion metrics to help with this and make it a little bit more digestible for creative people, is when you're looking at things like through play and hold rate and average watch time, like all of these things could be lingo that media buyers are very familiar with because they spend time in platform. But our question was like, how do you humanize it a bit to communicate that to a creative person who actually doesn't want to think about what thumb stop ratio means or like these different kinds of like, you know, jargon that media buyers spend all their time on. And so we came up with almost like a funnel version of thinking about a creative and kind of talked about it that way. So we give a score to a creative on a number of dimensions. You mentioned a couple of them. How good of a job does it do at capturing attention? So we give a score on that. How good of a job does it do at holding attention? People like actually watch this video, driving traffic and driving conversion. And so basically those are the four things that you want your creative to do. And the way we look at it is we combine a number of different metrics, compare it to the baseline in the account, and we give it a score. And so I think you can trust it, and you can actually, you know, look at those motion metrics and then compare it to some of the soft metrics that you might use to back into that like more humanized score. And it always correlates because we're taking, you know, what the media buyer might look at as analyzing those four parts of the funnel. So you mentioned like click to purchase, that's a very heavy input in like driving conversion. Right? If motion gives it a high score in drive to conversion, it always correlates well to a high like click to purchase ratio. And it just means that you don't have to communicate to a creative person like, hey, there's this thing, it's called click to purchase ratio. We do it by like looking at the number of clicks, dividing. It's like, wait, what are you talking about?
Look at the bar.
Yeah, you lost me. Like,
Is it green?
That means like it's driving conversion, or it means that people are like clicking and like going to our website. So that's good. Or it means like people are stopping in their feed, and that's great. Or people are watching this video, and that's what we want to see. And so, you know, the thing you mentioned that we take very seriously at Motion is like, we almost think about ourselves as a communication platform where we're doing a translation. If you think about like media buyers speak one language, creative people speak a different language. And in the same way that you have like AI tools now that are meant to like, you know, live translate people's voice so they can like understand each other. That's kind of how we think about Motion, is how do we translate media buying jargon that's revenue obsessed, performance obsessed, in a way that creative teams can understand, so that you can start to instill a culture of performance and a culture of like revenue obsession on the creative team in a way that's not very difficult to like point of Motion, and things like motion metrics help that conversation become much easier.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Question for you. You know, Triple Whale came out with a bit of a competitor last year, the year before at that point. Why would somebody use Motion versus just using that within Triple Whale in their creative cockpit there?
Yeah, it's a great question. First thing I would say is like, just try them both, compare, and then see for yourself. I think what people will realize is in software, it's very difficult to actually build really good software. And I think the way that you build really good software is through focus. And so if you're focused on a very specific problem, you will see the quality of that software be just really good at solving that problem. And I think when you try to solve many different problems, and sometimes like, you know, it's like a bit different business strategy. Some people kind of have like an all-in-one platform and try to solve lots of different problems. But I think what you'll find there is that those like secondary and third problems that a software goes on to solve, they will never be treated with the same amount of quality and focus that a company who's like specialized on one thing that might do. And so I think oftentimes what you'll see is when you don't have a very complicated use case, or it just doesn't really matter that much to have like the best software, then, you know, but Motion in many ways is built for higher volume, high growth teams that have like a very high volume of creative output, where this starts to become like a pretty important problem for them. And so it just makes a lot more sense to use Motion that's like dedicated and focused. Like we have a team of around 30 people that are focused on just this one exact problem. And so my prediction to people who would use Motion and use something else is that you will see that reflected in the software that I think we've built the best product. And customers who also use Triple Whale or other products. And I don't think a lot of people have left Motion to switch to other platforms. We just don't see that very much.
I love Triple Whale, guys. Just so you know, I love Triple Whale. I use them for other things, but I do not use the Creative Cockpit. It's just not, it's never been something that's worked well for me. This is why I was searching for a solution.
Frankly, for Creative Cockpit to be frankly as good as Motion, like you would need to put a team that's as large as Motion on that one specific problem forever. Because all we do is improve this product. And I think it's just like, it's hard to achieve that unless you match the level of focus and dedication that Motion has. And it's just hard to do that. I think we have the best product.
I tend to agree. And not because you happen to be the sponsor this month, but because I use you for everything. So Reza, the last question today, I got to ask you the question I ask everyone who comes on the podcast. What is your secret to scaling?
My secret to scaling is obsessing over the problem. And if you have an organization and you're a founder or you're an executive, oftentimes like we're thinking about solutions or ideas or like things that we want to do and things that we think we should do or like be a good idea to do. And it's like so many different motivations for doing something. And there's this like principle that I always try to go back to, which is like, if you were to articulate what problem are we trying to solve here, you would be surprised the number of like meetings and conversations where we're talking about a solution of some kind, but the problem is not well defined.
But there's no problem.
Or if there is, there might be five different problems. And like, and if I think if you don't have clarity around what problem you're solving, then how on earth could you implement the right solution? And the thing about scaling an organization is that every additional team member that joins, the company gets so much more complicated very, very quickly. And so you need these simple.
I'm sure you've seen that triangulation.
I've seen it.
Chart before.
I've seen
crazy.
It.
And I've crazy felt every it. Team member you had.
And I felt it deeply. And so when you have a team of people who are trying to create solutions to things, if everyone is always centered back to like, okay, but what problem are we actually looking to solve? It makes decision making like much, much easier, because oftentimes people have different problems in their minds of what they think they're solving. And so when you focus the conversation back to problem solving and like what actual problem are we actually talking about here, then I think I found that to be a very helpful way to like cut through the noise and get people aligned very quickly on why conversation, like what are we looking to solve? Yeah. And if we're not aligned there, and how on earth could we possibly be aligned on the solution to that problem?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, that's why I'm a huge EOS fan. L10 meetings are all based around issues, right? That's what we do. And then we come up with our things from there. So yeah, I could not agree with you more. I absolutely love that. And something I wish I would have learned way earlier in business. Reza, we're at the end of our time here. This has been an awesome convo. Where can people connect with you, learn more about Motion? Should I ask you this before? Do you have any special offers for our audience?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter at Reza Kajavi. Motion is at motionapp.com. We're creating a lot of content on LinkedIn these days, so you can follow us all there. And yeah, in terms of, I think we have one going right now where if you mention the Upgrowth Commerce podcast, you get 50% off your first month to try Motion. Give us a shout and we'd love to show you what we're all about.
Yeah, highly, highly recommend, guys. I cannot say enough good things about Motion. I've been posting about them and for them for ages before they were ever a sponsor, because it's just the tool that I use to make all my decisions. Creative decisions, not life decisions, everyone. Reza, such a good conversation. Thank you again so much for your time today.
Thanks, Jordan. Appreciate it.
And guys, remember, everything that we've talked about today will be down in the show notes. We are obsessive with our show notes. All the links, everything is there. The link to Reza's Twitter, to LinkedIn, to all of that kind of stuff. Highly recommend checking those out. Thank you again, guys.
Hey guys, just wanted to say thanks again so much for listening to the podcast. If I could ask one favor of you, it would be to share this with your other e-commerce store owner friends. We want everyone in the e-com space to be listening to this podcast, and lots of you guys already are, and we really, really appreciate that. One last thing before you go as well is we are offering to our podcast listeners a free e-commerce growth plan where we go from strategy to sale with your brand in this e-commerce growth plan. So feel free to go to www.upgrowthcommerce.com/grow and apply for a free growth plan today. Thank you all again so much for listening.